Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. Today my guest is Jay Warner. He's a best-selling author and six-time Grammy-winning music publisher. He's one of the most acclaimed music publishers in America today. His books include American Singing Groups, How to Have Your Hit Song Published, which I think has been out for 30 years, and On This Day in Music History. He lives in L.A., of course, and his new book is called Notable Moments of Women in Music. And I wanted to do something a little different with this show, since it's primarily about music, women in music, and the influence they've had over the past century. And I asked Eric Ryder to be co-host today. Eric, hi.
Hey.
And he's with us every week, as you know,
Absolutely.
But today he's going to co-host. And he's also, I'm going to ask him what he's done, because we did the interview with Jay a couple of weeks ago, and Eric has produced this, and I haven't heard it yet, so I'm looking forward to hearing it. Tell us what you've done with it.
Well, as you know, I love both women and music, so I appreciate you helping me, or having me help you out on this one. It was a lot of fun to produce. What I've actually done is I've taken samples of a lot of the music that we discuss, a lot of the artists that we discuss during the interview, and I've kind of spliced them in with the interview so people get a real idea of the artists that we're talking about in the discussion that we have. So, and we kind of stretch from the beginning of recorded music, going all the way back to when things were on wax cylinders and being released on the Edison Recording Company. As we all know, Thomas Edison was the guy that invented recording technology. And so we've got some stuff from that very early part of recording all the way up to the present day. And we've spliced it all together into the interview. And it makes a really entertaining hour, I think, of conversation and music. So should
be
fun.
I'm certainly looking forward to it. And I can tell by your face you had fun doing this. Yeah, it starts in vaudeville, as you said, and goes all the way through to today's pop music factory, as our guest termed it. So I guess we can just jump on in and let's listen to some music and hear what's happened over the last century.
Let's do it.
Well, Jay Warner, welcome. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you're a six-time Grammy-winning music publisher. Tell us what a music publisher does. Is it different from a music producer?
It's quite different. A music publisher really controls the music that writers have. To simplify it, there's really three purposes of a music publisher, and everything is subcategories. We protect people's rights in terms of their music around the world. We collect the money on the uses of the music and everything around the world, and we try to exploit the material as well. In all markets and medium, so that whenever something is on a TV show or in a film or a commercial or a video game, we're the ones who negotiate the licenses on behalf of our writers to get a fee for the use of it under federal copyright law.
Oh, interesting, interesting. And you're one of the few music publishers who also writes. In fact, I don't think many producers or publishers write very much on this subject, but you've written several books, right?
Yeah, well, I started, you know, I was a real record collector, and out of it studied a lot and became really interested in music overall, all types, I became a music historian and then started writing on copyright law for publishing, and then expanded that into writing on music histories, because I found a lot of niches that people really weren't writing about, and they were, interesting to the public, but there were no volumes strictly related to that. For instance, I did a book on American singing groups from the 40s to the present, and nobody had ever bothered to do a volume strictly based on American singing groups from those periods, or at all, really. They were often in books of music of certain types, but they were never given an entity unto themselves.
Mm. Now, your new book is called Notable Moments of Women in Music. It says that some of the characteristics of the women who've shaped modern history, pioneering, gutsy, innovative, inspiring. Tell us a little bit about the book itself.
Well, again, it was kind of a niche thing of doing a history going back to like the 1890s or so, when a lot of the early legends were born, into when they started recording and performing. It's kind of like a decade-by-decade look at women in all types of music: jazz, blues, R&B, rock and roll, pop, country. And it's more of vignettes on people's lives than it is full stories of certain artists. I mean, there have been books out that there was a recent book, I think, on about five or six of the great 60s female artists. But I wanted to cover a broad stroke at once. And so it goes from, we're talking about from Atta Jones and Mae West on up to Celine Dion and Mary J. Blige.
Well, it's fascinating reading about the early days of recorded music and female involvement there. You talk about some of the very earliest recordings being as opera and some Broadway songs as well, being some of the early stuff that was really popular.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because, you know, popularity charts started in the early 1900s. Many of them were just... either local or East Coast or different things, and they crossed amazing genres. I mean, for example, there were opera tunes and Broadway tunes, as you mentioned, that were actually on the popularity charts. And in those days, there was no radio, so the popularity charts were by live performances and sheet music. Many people had pianos, and sheet music was a big seller in the early 1900s. In teens, you could sell a million copies of a piece of sheet music.
Wow.
In the United States. So it's a fascinating era. It's also, it was interesting to me because of all these pioneers, people that were the early influences of people to come. I mean, Atta Jones, for example, totally unknown today, but, you know, she was like the... Mariah Carey of her day. I mean, she had over 100 hit recordings over about a 20-year period. She sang with a guy named Bill Murray, certainly nothing to do with Saturday Night Live. But she had about 40 hits with him in duets. I mean, she was an amazing artist. And in the late 1800s, setting up for that early 20th century, there were acts like Mamie Smith and Sophie Tucker and Ma Rainey and Fanny Bryce. You know, there were tremendous artists that were, priming themselves for popularity in the early 1900s, or rather 20th century, that became the role models for a lot of other women later on.
So this seemed like a good place to actually hear some of these early female pioneers. So first we'll hear a little bit of Silver Bell from Atta Jones and Billy Murray from 1911. This was originally released on a wax cylinder on the Edison Recording Company. And then after that, we're going to hear a little bit of Fanny Bryce singing I'd Rather Be Blue from 1928.
Silver Bell, sung by Miss Atta Jones and Billy Murray, Edison Records.
Down the stream, gaily paddling his tiny canoe, a chieftain longing to woo, sang her this song.
I'd rather be blue, thinking of you. I'd rather be blue over you than be happy with somebody else. I can't do without you, without you. For you I'm strong, I'm crazy, oh.
What criteria did they have to meet to get in the book? I'm not sure how many women you included, but there are a lot.
Yeah, there's a couple of thousand, I would say. But the criteria was a cross-section of popularity based on the time period, because, as I said, up until the 20s, there was no radio. There were early recordings starting in the early 1900s, 1906 and 1904. So the criteria was basically their popularity, their status as to being influences of other artists, their notoriety, which in many cases some of these ladies were very notorious, because you had to be, and that's why I called the first chapter the first Gutsy Girls. You had to be pretty gutsy to get out there in a man's world and entertain. And you had to have some talent as well as what they considered at that time, great looks, in order to be able to perform and have, what you considered your lifestyle, no matter what anybody else thought. These were really independent women. These were women that men came out to see and fantasize about, but they sure wouldn't take them home to their mothers.
Well, when you talk about how even in the early days, any music that wasn't church music was considered by religious leaders the devil's music. So some women were changing their names as performers just so they wouldn't be shunned at church.
Very true. And that happened for quite a long time. Even into the 30s and 40s, many artists used false names. It was the same thing with some vocal groups, which was really interesting. In the 40s and early 50s, there were some great gospel vocal groups that would record under one name, and when they would go across the street and cut a secular record, they'd record under another name because they didn't want to get, thrown out of the church.
Eric made an interesting observation. We were talking before the show, and I'll let you make it, Eric, about music versus singers versus versus musicians.
Well, it's interesting to me that even from the earliest days of recording of music, and really from music being performed, women have always been involved, but usually as a singer, not as a musician, like a drummer or a bass player or a guitarist or something along those lines. And the book is really features necessarily so a lot of information about women singers through the years. But why do you think it was that women could be accepted as singers but not as musicians in their own right?
Well, it's more about putting a spotlight on something in popularity. There were some very good women musicians, especially some horn players in the 20s, especially with the big bands. There were even some all-girl orchestras. But it wasn't something that was touted or exposed or given a great opportunity for popularity.
Mm-hmm.
It focuses on solo artists because women stood out in that way to a greater degree.
Do you have a favorite period in time when you were putting this together? Was there a time that really, spoke to you?
Well, I would say the 60s really got to me, because the point of views, women always had a point of view and said what they felt. And for example, around the late 40s, early 50s, Ruth Brown was asked, at what point did rhythm and blues start becoming rock and roll? And she said, without even a double take, she said, when the white kids started to dance to it. So, the 60s for me were when a lot of women started to voice their opinions on a broader things and vocalize points of view that, some were very poignant, some were direct. Carly Simon once said, I think it's an asset to a performer to be sexually attractive. And then you get a poignant point of view from somebody like Janis Joplin, who said, on stage I make love to 25,000 people and then I go home alone.
Mm.
So, there's a lot of introspective information, and the 60s just were a vibrant time. Many different types of music were changing the landscape and having an effect to a great degree on the public, and women were in the forefront of it. There were a lot of great women. Grace Slick from the Jefferson Airplane. Now, see, there's an act. Grace, although a tremendous vocalist, always sang with a band. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, all equal in the sense of their visibility to the public. But she was, you know, a spokeswoman for women and point of views, even in that time, standing out from the band. There were, I mean, I loved Joni Mitchell and, you know, was Streisand from another type of music, from a whole other direction. They were just, it was a unique period. I mean, ending with Woodstock and everything, there was something about the 60s to set the tone for the next 50 years of music.
Mm. And here's another great place to pause and actually hear some of this music. Here's Janis Joplin singing a bit of Peace of My Heart from 1968. And then we've got a little bit of Jefferson Airplane with Grace Slick on vocals singing Somebody to Love from 1967. More of our conversation with Jay Warner, author of Notable Moments of Women in Music, and more looking back on the history of great women in music as we continue here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair right after this.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcasts today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
Help me, I think I'm falling. Get that crazy feeling, I know I'm in trouble again. I'm in trouble, 'cause you're a rambler and a gambler and a sweet-talking ladies' man. And you love your loving.
And welcome back to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and me co-hosting today, Eric Ryder. And we are looking back at notable moments of women in music with author Jay Warner. That, of course, just a little bit of Carly Simon singing Help Me from 1974. When we left off, we were talking about music in the 60s. And let's pick up where we left off. And women really came into their own as songwriters in the 60s, it seems like.
Yeah, they did. You know, their points of view in interviews also came out of their, translated from a lot of their lyrical points of view. I mean, one of the first really women situations whereby you would hear a real definite defiance in their relationship with men was a song, You Don't Own Me, by Leslie Gore. And that kind of was an anthem until others came along, like Donna Summer, which She Works Hard for the Money. And there were a lot of points of view developing from the 60s that, you know, made women even more independent than they'd ever been before.
While Leslie Gore did release You Don't Own Me in 1964, she was also responsible for some of the less empowering anthems of the 60s, Judy's Turn to Cry and It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To. But here's a little bit of You Don't Own Me, followed by Donna Summer, She Works Hard for the Money, from 1983.
You don't own me, I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me, don't say I can't go with other boys. And don't tell me what to do, don't tell me what to say. And please, when I go out with you, don't put me on display, 'cause you don't own me.
You put an incredible amount of research into this, Jay. Was there something that really surprised you when you were doing your research? I mean, I'm sure you had many surprises along the way, but, you know, what stands out in memory right now?
Well, you know, again, with so much research and so many different things, it's hard to pin down on just a couple of individual elements. But
right.
I was fascinated by Janis Joplin's story. I was, you know, impressed by people... you know, like Deborah Harry, who had a real strong point of view. I mean, I think she once said the only people who can express anything new in rock are girls and gays. You know, it became
right.
a very, very feminist point of view, and I think that that really came across well. You know, in the 80s, you know, they got out. Even more of an attitude and a point of view because there were media capabilities that they hadn't had earlier that they could reach people quicker. And, you know, you said something and it was around the world really, really fast. I mean, I just remember Pat Benatar, who I always loved. I had, in fact, one of her first recordings was one of my songs. She cut a Rascals tune called You Better Run. So I followed her career, and I remember her once giving a quote very angrily that I taught Madonna how to wear tights. I'm so happy someone else is doing it. Now maybe they won't look at the color of my panties and they can concentrate on my singing. I mean, you wouldn't have gotten that in the 50s.
No.
Oh,
head is yours, and now I'm closing all the doors. What you trying to do to my soul? You better run, you better hide, you better leave from my side, yeah.
Girls with Attitude, Deborah Harry fronting Blondie, doing Heart of Glass from back in 1979, and Pat Benatar, You Better Run, from 1980s.
I love this. It's amazing how, no matter how big people get, they still get starstruck. And Ella Fitzgerald, and I'm not sure at what time of her career this was, but she saw Billie Holiday and she ran over to her between shows to ask for her autograph, and she says, I still don't know if it was the right thing to do.
Well, that's another part of why I wrote the book this way. I've written other books like this in the sense that I always like to trace back to who influenced who in history, and you just, you know, described a specific situation that was very common. Artists were like fans when they found somebody that influenced them and that they just adored. And you can go back to almost any one of these people and find the same situation.
Well, here's a quote from Patti Smith from back in 1976 that you feature in the book. Instead of messiahs, we always had big rock and roll stars. We'd like to see who we're worshiping.
So, that's right.
Kind of plays into it.
And sometimes with Patti, she'd like to see them without their clothes.
There you go.
She was a real groupie.
Oh, she was. That's how she got out. So is there anybody that stands out in your mind? I'm sure there are many, but anybody in particular who you think has been really underestimated or overlooked by the public at large?
Well, obviously older acts have been, because the history hasn't been brought up to date, which was another reason that I wanted to write this. There are many people that have heard names like Billie Holiday, but they don't really know both the power of this woman's capability musically and the influence she had on so many artists. Mm-hmm. Everybody from Aretha Franklin to artists of today, and many of them don't even realize that the tie back to some of these artists is through other artists that they liked, that liked former artists, that liked Billie Holiday or Atta Jones or, you know, Mae West. I mean, Mae West was a powerful performer, entertainer, singer, and she had an attitude. I mean, she was the early Madonna.
And she's still so talked about today as well.
Right, but you don't hear any of her records.
There's
nobody that plays this music that gives this generation any wider parameter than, you know, records of the last 10 years.
Well, I think she's just really remembered at large for that one line, which was, what was it, come up and see me sometime, or something like that.
Yeah, and that had to come out of a film, so.
Yes, yeah.
Here's a little bit of Lover Man from Billie Holiday from 1954, and a little bit of Mae West from 1933, I'm No Angel.
But I'm feeling so sad, I long to try something I've never had. Never had no kissing. Oh, what I've been missing. Love a man, oh, where can you be? The night is cold and I'm so all alone. I'd give my soul just to call you my own. Got a moon above me, but no one to love me. Love a man, oh, where can you be?
Oh, come on, let me cling on to you like a vine. Make that low-down music trickle up your spine. Baby, I can warm you with this love of mine. I'm no angel. Oh, let me feel your fingers running through my hair. I can give you kisses till you walk down air. Love me, honey, love me till I just don't care. I'm no angel. I'll take your blues, stomp down your troubles, rock you with a steady roll. Here's your connection, take my affection.
Now, I wanted to talk about something that's a little topical. Is it Dancing with the Stars is a show on, and Belinda Carlisle is in there. I saw an outtake from it, and that you have a quote from her. She says, after we sold 3 or 4 million albums, we thought we wouldn't be treated like an all-girl band anymore, but as a rock and roll band. It never really worked out.
And she was the front woman for the Go-Go's, of course. And that's why she's talking about being in an all-girl band, because the Go-Go's were one of the pioneers, I guess, in being all-girl rock and roll bands that had success anyway.
Oh, okay.
Right. I mean, and yet they were influenced by a group called Fanny on Warner Brothers that had some, you know, mild chart success in the 60s, and yet, you know, weren't as big as they should have been. Girl bands, just by the very nature, for whatever reason, have not gained the popularity. That's why acts like Belinda went out on their own and such, because, again, it's a stereotype of, I don't know, it's just people don't gravitate to it from a world view, a popularity standpoint, as they do to a solo artist. Maybe they can't get their minds around, you know, that kind of talent, or there haven't been all-star girl groups going out.
It didn't help that Fanny had a terrible name.
Yeah. Well, terrible but pioneering. They had the guts to get out there, and somebody at Warner's was stoned enough to sign them.
Right, right, right. And then, of course, in the 70s, there was the Runaways, who were fairly successful, but you can make an argument there that they were kind of exploited as an all-girl group.
Well, if you didn't get exploited, you didn't really get to the public and get some success. I don't think it was so much the music as it was the innovative aspect of what it was, and I don't know if the music was actually, you know, looked into very hard. You know, that's, again, why the book is predominantly solo artists. If I had to write a book like this on girl bands, it would be about 3 pages long.
When I heard you packed your suitcase and they say you're running wild, playing games around my understanding, you know that's kind of two-faced, cause I love you like a child, but now I think it's time I put a hand in. Well, you say I don't protect you, that I let you trip and fall. You couldn't stand alone if you could learn to. I'd like to feel correct you, cause that isn't true at all. I've always been the one that you could turn to. Well, brother, evidently, yes, I did it all somehow. If I ever needed saving, don't you know I need it now? So come and shame me.
From their self-titled debut, Fanny, that is Shade Me. And here's a little bit of the Runaways doing Cherry Bomb from 1977, very much in keeping with the punk scene that was going on at the time. Stay tuned, we'll be back with more of our discussion with Jay Warner on notable moments of women in rock here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair on Alternative Talk 1150.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org. or call 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Dr. Shoshana Bennett, author of Pregnant on Prozac, will examine the controversy and myths of taking antidepressants while pregnant. We'll review alternative treatments, potential risks, and how to talk with your family and friends about this painful issue affecting millions of women. Later in the show, it's Dr. Mario Skuger, one of America's most trusted thyroid authorities. He'll share answers, advice, and peace of mind on thyroid controversies, early detection of thyroid cancers, and treatment options in the Cleveland Clinic Guide to Thyroid Disorders. That's all coming next Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See the guest schedule at conversationslive.net.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Alternative Talk 1150 is now being broadcast in digital quality on FM 98.9 HD3. So rejoice, you early adopters of technology.
No doubt influenced by both Fanny and the Runaways, there's a little bit of the Go-Go's, We Got the Beat, as we get back into our conversation with Jay Warner here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
We were chatting before the show about American Idol. What do you think that's contributing to music?
Well, I think, you know, like Star Search before it and shows like that, it contributes something on a certain level, but it's, you know, it's more a Simon Cowell vehicle and an entertainment venue than it is just discovering talent. Because, I mean, there's been talent out there long before that show was around, but... Mm-hmm. You know, just so many people can make it. Plus the fact that, you know, politically, that show is tied to a major record label to where anything that wins comes out on that label. And you've already got, you know, millions of viewers that have now become fans because they get involved in the interactive aspect of voting. So it's really the business element is a combined way to, you know, create stars just like they used to do it in the 60s and 70s. Without the media that they have today. They had different formulas for creating stars. The major companies could create a star if they got behind it really strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some acts that, to me, don't deserve to be the huge successes they are. And now we've got media stars that can barely sing, but, you know, I wouldn't want to mention any names, Paris Hilton. But,
that was subtle.
Yeah, I'm very subtle. You know, it's a strange situation in today's media where you can get things internet-wise instantly, and everybody's got a YouTube page or a MySpace. You know, I think it's easier to win the lottery than to really become a success through those outlets. But it's everybody's 15 seconds of fame.
Right, there seems to be a great need for that these days.
I mean, and then there are artists who are really incredible vocalists who are just so self-destructive that they attract a lot of attention. I mean, one of them that to me was like I think of Amy Winehouse a lot because
she's in
the news a lot. But I mean, she was like I bet one of her influences was Sinead O'Connor because I remember. Sinead saying something like, "What pisses me off is when I've got seven or eight record company fat pig men sitting there telling me what to wear."
Yeah,
you know, she was real radical, and yet there were people influenced by her, especially in Britain.
Yeah, so, I remember that time because she was huge in Britain, and then she suddenly got very political, and she kind of died a death, but I think she resurrected after that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a little difficult to come back from ripping up a picture of the Pope on national TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, she's definitely had her ups and downs, but definitely a fearless artist.
Yeah, and that's what I was pointing at, that she is a great, great sounding artist if you just sing.
Sinead O'Connor's Mandinka from 1989. And here's a little bit of Rehab from Amy Winehouse in 2007.
Rehab, I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, just try to make me go to rehab.
Who do you listen to at home, Jay?
I listen to a cross section of stuff. Because of business, I listen to some people that I'm working with, like Tina Marie, a lot of my artists are males, but I especially like Tina. I think she's an incredible diva. When you mentioned before, people you think are underrated or haven't gotten the success they should have. This is a woman that can out-sing just about almost any black lady, and she's never really had, with all the hits she's had, she's never really gotten the exposure that she deserves. And I think part of that is she's never really had, and this is a good, important point related to music, whether it's men or women, she's never had the political team, the capability, the management and such to build her in such a way. I remember when she had the she made her comeback a number of years ago with the LaDonna album, and the album went gold, and her manager never got her on one major TV show.
Oh,
I've had acts that have done a lot less than go gold and appear on Letterman and Jay Leno and everything, and she wasn't on anything. It's like she was a mystery woman. So, I mean, there's one I would say is, well underrated. I mean, I've seen her perform, and she can sing almost anybody under the table.
And she's one that is also a gifted musician and songwriter in her own right, correct?
Very definitely. And she was discovered by Rick James, and he just fell in love with her. She could write very, very good material, and she was a great interpreter of his songs, her songs. Quite a performer, too. I mean, very, very exciting. She really had passion on stage. But unfortunately, she doesn't perform as often as she should, and she hasn't gotten the accolades that some others have. Maybe at some point she will.
Well, with so many artists out there, it is kind of like winning the lottery when anybody is successful in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like winning the media lottery is, you know, who's focusing on you at the time or what you've done. You know, it's like, Fergie coming out of Black Eyed Peas or Nora Jones for a totally different type of music, or Carrie Underwood, for whatever they've done. Avril Lavigne, she's a real trip, and she gets a lot of visibility. She's a good singer. I don't think she's any standard bearer, but, you know, when you make remarks like, what did she once say? I've been known to run around naked when I'm drunk. One time I was drinking whiskey and I was so loud someone called the police. I have a side to me that's a bit delinquent and I get myself in trouble. Well, you know the press is going to come looking for you.
Right. Right. That just blew my question. I was going to ask you a question.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Well, don't think that I don't know what I'm feeling for you.
Tina Marie's Lover Girl. Here's a little bit of Avril Lavigne, Complicated.
You the way you are when we're driving in your car, and you're talking to me one-on-one, but you become somebody else, round everyone else. You're watching your back like you can't relax. You're trying to be cool, you look like a fool to me. Tell me, why do you have to go and make things so complicated? I see the way you're acting like you're somebody else, gets me frustrated.
I know that you wrote another book called, I know you've written several books, but one was called How to Have Your Hit Song Published.
Yeah.
It's been around for like 30 years, I believe. Is that correct? It's a long
Bingo.
Time.
Bingo. Exactly 30 years.
Yeah. So how does someone know when they've written a hit song?
Well, they, songwriters are interesting. I think everybody thinks they've written a hit song, whether they've stuck it in the drawer or, or tried to promote it, whatever. I know that with my writers over the years, and I worked with everybody from, I had Springsteen and Manilow and a lot of major writers that aren't well known to the general public. Like I had a guy named Ben Weissman, whose claim to fame only in part was he wrote 57 songs for Elvis Presley. And he was a brilliant writer. And the one thing they all had in common was their newest song was always their favorite, and they always thought it was a hit.
Oh, interesting. I've had a lot of creative people say that their latest one is always their favorite.
Yeah.
That's because you get sick of the old stuff.
Yeah, and that always translated into their publishers being pressured to make sure that the new song got out there. Uh-huh. But we were always promoting as many of their songs and their past songs as well, because songs have a life of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've always felt that every, 5 years there's a whole new generation of music listeners that never heard the last, centuries worth of material before that. So promoting older music has always been a staple in the business. Not as much today as it used to be because everybody's sampling or, rap has taken a great toll on the charts. But, up until around the late 80s, early 90s, you would always see artists doing covers of somebody else's song from a generation or two generations before with a new twist on it and a new sound. And it brought in a whole new audience to that song and that style.
Well, now they just sample it.
Yeah.
And rap over the top.
That's it, yeah. But we still license it no matter what.
Very good.
You covered a lot of history in this book. Where do you see music, or women in particular, singers, going from here?
Oh, that's anybody's guess. I don't want to, get a crystal ball out and say where music's going to go. I would hope to see that with the people like Celine Dion and Mariah Carey and artists like that, more music gets back into, and that's one of the great things about female artists is that they have a melodic aspect to what they do for the most part. Partially because they've always been a minority. Even in rap, there are very few female rappers and many more male rappers. So I'm thinking that female vocalists of the future have a lot of people to emulate and learn from and idolize and will carry on music tradition rather than production tradition. And to me, rap and hip-hop is a lot of production work, not necessarily a lot of singing. So, the new artists, the Jennifer Hudsons and the, Alicia Keys and people like that have great voices and great tradition of, being influenced by great artists and learning from them so that it'll carry on. You never know who's going to be the next Aretha or the next Whitney or the next Celine, the next Streisand or Doris Day or any one of them at any generation. I mean, I'd love to hear. I mean, I heard, I was a big fan of the Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella Fitzgerald,
yeah. I was a great fan of Ella's and her music and her scatting and everything. And then I heard a rapper who I didn't like as a rapper, and then I saw her in a film doing jazz music. And she reminded me of Dinah Washington and Ella Fitzgerald, and it was Queen Latifah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Turned out to really be a singer.
I don't want you, but I hate to lose.
choose you. You've got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. I forgive you, 'cause I can't forget you. You've got me in between the devil and the deep blue sea. I ought to cross you off my list, but when you come knocking at my door, fate seems to give my heart a twist, and I come running back for more.
Ella Fitzgerald, Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. Here's a little bit of Queen Latifah doing Don't Cry Baby, and we've got a little bit of Alicia Keys coming up.
Don't cry, baby. Don't cry, baby. Dry your eyes and let's be sweethearts again. You know I didn't mean to ever treat you so mean. Come on, sweetheart, let's try it over again.
I just heard part of Marianne Faithfull's new record, new album, and she was singing Billie Holiday, but I have to say I preferred the Billie Holiday version.
Yes, well, you know, I'm not going to go there. But, yeah, I mean, there's the originals, and then there's copies, and sometimes pretty good copies, but there's only one original for a reason.
Yeah,
it's kind of like looking in today's marketplace, you look at artists that have survived from the 60s, again, 50s, 60s, early 70s, and there are artists like Tina Turner, Gladys Knight, you know, acts like that that have had 30, 40 years of being an individual artist, not only in personality, but in sound. And see, that's another element to longevity. If you have an individualistic sound, because some of these acts all sound the same today,
mm-hmm.
but some of the greats, and the reason they're greats, and the reason if they want to still perform, they still do, is because you hear them and you know it's them.
Yeah, and Billie Holiday, of course, I think is inimitable. Well, it's been such a great pleasure talking with you today. Did you have any final questions, Eric?
I did. You leave the book off with one entry for 2008, for April 15th. And I'm just wondering, we've had over a year or close to a year since then. Anything in the last year that you wish you could have squeezed in there before it went to be published?
Yeah, I probably would have had a lot more fun with Amy Winehouse. That's pretty much it.
There you go. Well, what would you like to leave our listeners with today? What do you hope they'll get from this book?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's an entertaining read. It's not the kind of thing you sit down and read cover to cover, but it's a great reference work. And I think, if anything, it would be especially interesting to people that, you know, are fans of women in music, that, you know, this will become a staple in their library. I mean, you can go to it and, you know, I like it because you can use it as a reference in terms of people go to something like this and, you know, check their birthdays, their anniversaries, their parole dates, whatever, you know, and then they...
parole dates, yeah.
And then they go back to, you know, seeing, well, it's today's March 27th, whoa, on this date in 92. Whatever, Shania Twain did this or something. It's relatable on many levels, and that's why I hope people will, you know, pick it up and you know, and use it and show their friends. And it's a different way of approaching women in music history that hasn't been done before, and I like to find those niches.
Yeah, I saw it described as both a resource and a celebration. And Jay Warner, you did a great job on this book, and I really appreciate you being with us today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that was a pre-recorded interview with Jay Warner, best-selling author and six-time Grammy-winning music publisher. I want to thank Eric Ryder for all the hard work he did on producing that. You were great.
My pleasure. Thanks for letting me do it. It was a lot of fun.
It was fun. We'll have to do it again. We'll have to do it again. And we'll be back next week with all new programming. We're talking about your thyroid, big, big issue. It's almost epidemic in America right now. And we'll also be talking about being pregnant on Prozac, another big issue that's flared up. So please join me next week. Thank you so much for being with us today. Until then, live well, live strong.